everybody, this is Sight to the Blind. And as I told you in previous episodes about the urgency of the water supply in this country, this is what they're telling you again.
Tonight, the Trump administration warning water system operators across the country to take steps to protect against a, quote, significant increase in cyber threat actors targeting America's water supply. It comes as a senior law enforcement official tells NBC News that a cyber attack launched on more than 30 municipal water systems across Minnesota this week bears all the hallmarks of Iranian-backed hackers, though the official cautions the forensic analysis is still in its early stages. The FBI now leading the investigation.
We've never had a similar incident, so this is the first.
One town says its water network went temporarily offline.
The water tower was calling for water, but the well was not working.
Officials say crews were able to quickly get the water systems running again, and that there is no indication the cyber attack made any water supplies unsafe to drink. A potential new threat from the Iranian regime, as overseas U.S. forces launching strikes against dozens of Iranian targets, including military command centers and missile and drone facilities. Aimed, CENTCOM says, at reducing Iranian threats to U.S. assets, commercial ships, and Gulf Arab allies. And all after the president vowed retaliation against Iran for its failed missile attack on American troops.
We're going to hit them very hard. I mean, I can actually say that because in that there's very little they can do about it.
The president insisting a deal with the Iranian regime can still be reached, despite Iran breaking last month's ceasefire agreement within hours of signing it. Iranian strikes leading to U.S. retaliation.
They nevertheless took a shot, so it's our turn. And we'll see if we get there with an agreement at some point.
Garrett, these potential hacks on our water systems are incredibly alarming. I know you have some late reporting on what the Trump administration says the hackers are doing to the water systems.
Yeah, Tom, the government's cybersecurity agency says that hackers modified passwords to lock operators out of these computer systems, that in some cases these resulted
now, common
in boil
sense would tell
water
you,
notices
if you go back
and
maybe
forced the operators
three
to take
or four years,
manual control of their
Russia
systems back.
Also,
Tom
was hacking our water supply or our water institutions. We don't even know if Flint got their clean water back. They just move on to the next story. And they're just making these stories up. But they're telling you they're going to hack somewhat. They're going to shut down the water reserves in this country. And they may divert them for these AI data centers. Because AI data centers need to consume large amounts of water. They're going to tell you it's a hack, but it's the AI data centers. All of a sudden, wildfires are popping up all around this country, even when the heat is not dry, but humid and has a lot of moisture in it. Yet they tell you there's wildfires that break out. They even tell you that some people are also arsonists, but you have to know that it is also controlled by either Freemasonry, Jesuits, or the CIA. That's why I told you and I urged you to start preparing and thinking about your water supply. That I think that's the most important resource. And like I said before, Michael Burry in the movie The Big Short, that's exactly what his last and only commodity is that he invests in was water. And this is when this movie came out, it was like, what, 2010 or 11 when this movie came out, talking about the 2008 housing crash. He's already prepared and knowing what was going to happen. And they put it right in front of your face. And people are like, oh, okay, he's invested in water now. And no one had no idea how important water would be in the future. Because data centers wasn't a thing in 2008 or when this movie came out. So I'm telling you, you better get ahead of it now. I already have the company called Ready Refresh, where they just drop off gallons of water. And I guarantee you, I know the membership and the subscription is going to go up, but I think I can handle that. Because what you don't want to do is try to get one of these 5-gallon drums of water in the grocery stores. They're going to run out because that's what everybody else is going to do. Everybody else is going to scramble or where they can get water. And it's kind of hard in Florida because it ain't like you can drink it out of the hose because we have well water here for most of these houses is grass. So when you see the well water in Florida, and you see like the brown tint on people's walls or on their fences, that's well water. It's tainted. And even the tap water that we get here, sometimes we could tell when they put chlorine in it because you can smell the chlorine coming out of the sink. So I wouldn't rely on, I just have tap water, because you don't know how infected the tap water could be. Like I said, you never know what they did in Flint. And you don't know if what happened to Flint is happening around the country. You're just not hearing about it because not enough people are complaining or don't even know or don't even care. You remember Mississippi had like a water problem. You didn't even hear about it anymore, because now you hear about Nolan Wells. So I'm saying prepare now. It's ain't like stocking up toilet paper, paper towels, and meats and foods. That's all. That stuff is all well and good. But I'm telling you, your key resource will be water. You have to bathe in it. You have to drink it. You have to sanitize certain foods with it. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm not saying it's going to happen all around this country in every single state, every single city, but I'm telling you, everybody's going to feel the heat with a lack of water supply. People are going to be going from state to state trying to find water. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. I'm not going to say it's going to happen next week, next month, or next year. But like I said, I'm getting ahead of it. I'm already ahead of it. I'm stacking up like gallon, like 5 or 6 gallon of drums. And mind you, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to beat the system at their own game. No, I know that the Most High Yahuwah is going to strengthen me in my ruach and my understanding of how to prepare by doing things a little bit ahead of schedule. This is what's going to happen. After they put these AI data centers in and people start losing their jobs from AI, you know the next domino that's going to fall is the housing crisis.
So look at this. Consider this our economy. You have 50% of white collars are going to vanish over the next 5 years. Gone. Which means that those people are going to have to liquidate their stocks, to pay for their homes, which will eventually run out, and mortgages will go unpaid, forcing them to sell their homes. And what are the jobs being lost? They're white-collar, high-end jobs that in the eyes of the bank, they were like, hey, this is a guaranteed guy to pay his mortgage. We call them AAA. And guess what? They're gone. Those AAAs are supposed to be secure investments for pensions and fixed income and low-risk, solid returns. And every time you take out one of these blocks, it becomes a liability and adding to the top of the tower. So what does government do? What did they do last time? They printed money. Quantitative easing. Just like after 2008, the government bailed out the banks. They pushed trillions of dollars into the economy to hedge off a total and complete collapse, like something like the Great Depression or something like that. But when government prints money, it causes inflation, and they take on a little bit of debt. I just told you there's $14 trillion of mortgages out there. If the high credit score people that the banks base their security on to make good on those mortgages, if the AAAs stop making payments because they were replaced by AI, the housing market now is three times the size it was in 2008, with double the debt. The government would have to print so much money that just the payments on the debt would consume 100% of the federal tax revenue.
There it is. That's what's going to happen. If you watch the movie The Big Short, they talk about at the end of the movie this thing about tranches. And they say they renamed the same tranche that they hid these AAAs, Bs, and lower Bs into one folder. They renamed it. I think it was a bespoke tranche, they called it now. So basically, they're going to be selling the same thing they sold in the movie The Big Short 2008, betting against the housing market. That's going to happen again. except they renamed the entity of what they call these mortgages that will go unpaid. I'm telling you, all hell is going to break loose because, let's be real, when it comes to races, from the real race war, Negroes have always been comfortable with less. We come from poverty. We come from not having or having very little. So us being poor, us struggling, has always been a thing that we can handle. This is almost like a silver lining when it came to these curses. It helped us navigate this country in a way where if you took everything from us, from the deepness of our ruach to the whiteness of our bones, we know how to handle poverty. Now, you get these other nations that come into this country, whether it be Asian, Indian, and white folk here, have no idea what it's like to not have. You look, see how crazy they get when they lose, you know, their house or when they get into a divorce. Look how crazy they get. These murder suicides. The guy recently who murdered his wife and all of his children, 8 people in total. He did this because he got caught cheating at the office with a young intern. Well, this is the story they told you. He got caught cheating. So instead of this man just filing for divorce, he knew he wouldn't do it because he would lose everything. One, he would lose his reputation. One, he would lose his family. His kids would look unfavorably upon him. And he would be paying child support for all those kids. So he thought, well, you know what? Everybody need to go. And then burn up the house. I mean, I don't know the point of doing that when you're going to unalive people anyway. But they have Americans, white Americans have not known what it feels like to do without and have everything snatched from them. They don't know who to fight because the system has always been for them. They don't know who to complain to because they've always had no complaints. The government has always been an image of them. And now Jews came in there and disrupted it. This is who they're going to attack. This is who they're really at war with. See, after the curses, the Most High said, he has said in Deuteronomy, he said, once you come back to me, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, once you come back to me, I will put these curses upon your enemies. Now, I'm not saying white folk are our enemies, but anybody who's the enemy to the truth, anybody who's put us in captivity is going to get their due recompense. And the people who are going to get their due recompense are the people who are still Christians, are the people who are still Catholics, are the people who are still doing these pagan feast days. You make yourself an enemy of the Most High Yahuwah. This is why he said in Revelation, come out of her, my people, so you don't get her plagues. Now, all you got to do is look up online on X, and it talks about all these posts of how the Jews can't stand the white race, which is funny to me because they're white also. Being Jewish is not a race, but they have so much propaganda aimed at white Americans because they cannot stand them. For some reason, I don't know. I mean, they had a disdain for us. I mean, they still do, but they don't go hard at us as now they're starting to turn and go hard at white Americans. They can't stand the government, that they have to use them to control what happens. They cannot stand it, which I thought that this little thing in Spain was organic. You thought this thousands of men, military age, was just unleashed on this small little island. You thought they just one day just picked a day, which was Spain's throne day. They just picked a day. Oh, no, I think it was Morocco's throne day. They just picked a day, the same day as that, to unleash all these men between 19 and 30 into a small city and have them run around like chickens with their heads cut off. They did this for a reason. They made it seem like, oh, Spain is anti-Israel. No, it ain't. They got Freemasons in charge to play control ops, so they have a reason to unleash foolishness into somebody else's country because they can't stand the white race. They can't stand you. They can't stand anybody because they know that the white race is in charge. So you have to take down who's in charge. So that's why they get Negroes and white folk to fight a lot. This is why you get all this race baiting that's going on social media. No one's even getting checked for saying the N-word. I seen a post on X that literally had 10 I hate N-words all like in capital letters. And nothing has happened. I have never seen a post get taken down or said this was taken down because it was harmful. I don't even see that on X. You see it a little bit on Twitter, on TikTok, only because there's truth attached to it. But for the most part, it's a free for all in X. And you know how that happened. You know who's running that algorithm. So they're trying to destroy the upper class, middle class to lower middle class of white Americans. That's what these curses are turning into in this country. If we were ripped from our homes, if we were always oppressed, if we was trodden down, that recompense is going to happen to those who do not follow the law, statutes, commandments, which is why I implored people to start coming out of this system and start worshiping and praising, because that is the hedge you are going to need to make sure you stay intact in your own house, in your own car, in your own job, and in your own resources. That is our defense. We don't need the Constitution, the Civil Rights, or the Declaration of Independence. We never needed it because it wasn't for us. And if I'm talking to white Americans in this country who are listening, you also better give up this patriotic nonsense and leave this country alone. If your kingdom is not of this world, then you start acting like it and start preparing for that kingdom and leave this kingdom alone, because it's getting destroyed. Like I said, they made the whole LeBron James trade out of a ritual as a signal that they were going to destroy this place. In other news, Qatar Energy recently disclosed the discovery of an additional offshore oil deposit within Namibia's Orange Basin, further establishing the Southern African country as a premier global destination for oil exploration. Now, they keep finding, more gold deposits in South Africa, even when the rush to Africa, you would think all these Europeans, Germans, Dutch people would have found it already. Yet they have not found all of it. This is what the Most High is doing. He is getting them to come into Southern Africa, or he's bringing them down to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. I don't see anybody clamoring over the resources in the Middle East. None. I do not see them making a mad rush to the Middle East, where supposedly all the oil is. You trying to tell me they're running out of oil in the Middle East? How are they still finding resources in Southern Africa in this modern age? Qatar Energy has discovered a new offshore oil deposit in Namibia's Orange Basin. You know where that is? It's close to where Skull Island is, where they call it Skull Island. Not Skull, it's called Skull something. Skull Coast, that's what they call it. They call it the Skull Coast because no ship can enter where, I told you, where around the Orange River, the real Jerusalem is. There is the facing the ocean side, which is on the west side of Jerusalem. No ship can dock there. And there's a bunch of ships that are just abandoned right on the beach shore because they can't get to it. It's the most hardest place to ever dock a ship. And this is also by plan by the Most High Yahuwah. You can almost say it fortified without even having a fence, that people couldn't go into that land because of the curse of Yirmiyahu, chapter 9, verse 11. And he said, desolate, desolate. When he says, without inhabitant, without inhabitant. So that's why ships have never been able to go around there. Now, I don't know how they found this oil deposit offshore, but the Most High must wanted them to know, to bring them down to the mountains, as it's mentioned in Ezekiel, in chapters 32 to into that chapter. Talks about the mountains. I'm going to bring them down to the mountains. I'm going to bring them down to my land. So all the resources are sitting in Africa, and they keep finding new resources, getting them to, in order to build their Tower of Babel, the Most High Yahuwah is going to allow them to come down And I don't get all excited when they show that there are Africans or Christian Muslim or Christians or Muslims are getting tore up in that country, because you don't know where that bloodline comes from. And like I said before, when you go to the David Rumsey's map collection and you look up Agag, you'll see so many locations where Agag is in southern Africa. And didn't the Most High say that he would have war with the children of Amalek from generation to generation? How do you not know that the Christians and Muslims, the African ones that they're talking about getting slaughtered, aren't not the children of Amalek? This is why it's important to know where the land is. Because everything that the Most High has ever said, he never said anything about going to anybody else's land. Oh, I'm going to go to the land of the north. I'm going to send people from the land of no. Everything has been done in and around Africa. I'm going to bring them down to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. I'm going to get the children of Yehuda to sell your children. And where are you going to sell them from? Sell them from Africa. When we go back, when we leave, where are we going? Africa. Where were we taken from? Africa. These little diaspora wars that Negroes are doing in this country is laughable because they're truly ignorant. Foundational Black Americans and African descendants of slaves. They sound stupid. We don't have no connection with Africa. Right. We were born here. Right. Even if you said that you sailed over here through the information of Ivan Sertma, I think his name is, and he wrote a book called They Were Here Before Columbus. Yeah, you still found your way into these curses. Oh, you're an Indian? I guarantee you, if you go back further enough, you're Indian from some of these five civilized tribes that upheld chattel slavery and took your grandmother in, made children with her, and now you don't even have lands, you don't have oil, you don't have casinos, you don't have reservations, but you were just the product of a bed wench from a Native American. That's all it is. Talking about we were here before everybody. No, you were spread out through a curse, which you aren't even the descendant of. In the book of Ezekiel, he said that I'm going to disperse the Hamites, the children of Ham, throughout all the countries. How do you think they got into South America? How do you think that, you know, there's Afro-Latinos in certain places? They were spread out. Not everybody is our kinfolk. Like I said, not everybody is our skin folk, is our kinfolk. But we focus so much on color in this country, it's truly a stupor. But the reason why I brought up the whole Southern Africa, the Southern Namibia oil exploration post that I saw, is because I was watching an old school movie. I watched it before. It was called King Solomon's Mines, 1937, starring Paul Robeson. And they're looking for King Solomon's diamonds, his jewels. And this is what was said in one of the scenes in this movie.
Uh-huh.
The map. Look, 300 years old. He said an ancestor of his went there and never come back. Look, the way across the desert. And here, King Solomon's Mount and the mine. The jewels of Ophir, the greatest treasure in the world.
He says the jewels of Ophir. Ophrah, the jewels of Ophrah. Nowhere in scripture it talks about the jewels of Ophrah. Now, if King Solomon was white and the real Jerusalem is in the Middle East, you would say, well, King Solomon conquered into Africa somehow and he has these mines. That could be your argument. Like, oh, he you know, his wisdom is so strong and so, you know, outreaching some of these nations, the smartest king that ever lived, that he could have, through marriage, gotten some of these diamond mines or gold mines or jewel mines in Africa. Okay, you could say that. But the reason why he says jewels of Ophrah, because it's actually a biblical city mentioned in scripture, Judges 6 and 11, and also some other places. This city is mentioned as where the Israelites were. So they know exactly where the real Yerushalayim is. They know exactly where real Yasharel is, and they've been knowing. In order to sell you a fake, they have to know where the truth is, because they wouldn't allow you to mistakenly find out the truth, but if they place the location somewhere close to where the truth is. so they would have to know where it actually is. Judges 6, verse 11 says, "And there came an angel of Yahuwah and sat under an oak, which was in Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash, the Abihaziri, and his son Gideon, threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites." We know the Midianites are close in the region where Cush is. We know Abraham married into Keturah. One of his sons from that marriage was Midian. Moshe married a Midianite woman. So even though his sister and brother couldn't stand the fact that he married outside of the nation, somewhat is still the bloodline of Abraham. So if you look at the map, Cush, or where Cush was, Sudan, around Sudan and Ethiopia. So it's still in Africa. So they know exactly where King Solomon mines are. They know where the gold and diamond deposits were, and they know who it belonged to. They know scripture. They read it. They know enough. They may not have the Ruach HaKodesh to be able to decipher certain things, but they know enough to know exactly through other information and other artifacts found in Africa. I mean, they made this mad dash to it in the, 17 or 1800s? They knew exactly what they were finding, the stories they were hearing. They knew they'd found or heard of stories of Israelites in that region. It's all on their maps. It's even written, this land was peopled by Jews. These people were the exile of Jews. They write it as notes on their maps. So they had to know in the 18th century, 17th century, 16th century, when they made these maps, these cartographers. So I thought that was interesting that they put it in the movie. And mind you, I don't even know if they found the King Solomon mines, because they didn't show any jewels or diamonds being found in this movie. It was just an African tribe that was trying to regain power of their land. And of course, these Irishmen and Scotsmen or whatever, one of the characters, Alan Quatermain, which is another character that was mentioned in another movie called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, played by, I can't think of his name, one of the Bond characters, the old man. He passed away. But one of the favorite Bond characters, he played Alan Quatermain in that movie. So, yes, they know exactly where the real Yerushalayim is. They know the importance of that land. Just like the Most High knows the importance of that land and of that season. So it's just another witness of why I choose, through all of my fact-finding about this calendar, to do the seasons that duplicate the seasons in Southern Africa. The Most High said that we would go wrong in all of the seasons. He never said that, hey, wherever I sent them, these seasons are okay. He would never put that in the scriptures to say that we would eventually be going wrong in the seasons of where these feast days are supposed to happen. So Africa, or Southern Africa, is the clock, is the truest clock, when all things are going to be renewed and all things coming into judgment and all things being redeemed. Not based on the Northern Hemisphere, not based on America's time frame, and not based on Israel in the Middle East's time frame. That's Satan's time frame. Now, I want to talk a little bit about being faint-hearted. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up, because if any of you have teenage children that are in sports and are struggling with trying to compete or be good in a sport, and you as a parent are struggling with their successes and also more their failures than success, please let me know how you are handling it and how you are staying in this walk, staying in the Ruach, and trusting Yahuwah through this process, because it's tough. Like, how do you know that when you're on this walk that you need to be putting more attention into this walk and into His Word, but also you want them to somewhat succeed in doing whatever that makes them happy? And when they are not accomplishing their goals, and when they are not using all of their talent and their gifts and playing a sport, what do you do as a parent? And knowing that the Most High really don't care about sports. That's how I reckon with it. All the times that I prayed before and after my football games, in the locker room, on the field, I think about it now, I was like, there's no way in the world the Most High cares about football or cared about basketball, or cared about any other sport. And that we thought, please don't allow us to get hurt, or please allow us to do good. And then within 12 hours or 24 hours, we sin and do all this stuff out of ignorance. So I gave up trying to ask for the Most High, what's the plan with her? I gave up trying to pray for her in hopes that she would use her ruach, her discernment, her strength that the Most High has given her, her fearlessness, to be good. And it's not happening. And you have to sit there as a parent, especially as a parent that you have been somewhat successful in a sport. You just watch your bloodline. You watch your seed just struggle with things they shouldn't have to struggle with. And it takes you out of your ruach sometimes because you get disappointed. You get upset that your child cannot accomplish a goal. That it feels like a never ending struggle. How do you handle that as a parent? I mean, it's really nothing in scripture. Well, it is, but not to the detail of really trying to do this walk and also do this world at the same time. Especially when you have children and they really want to do something and they're somewhat good at it. What do you do? I said this because my daughter was in a tennis tournament and I already knew she was going to be the first girl. The girl was 14 years old, my daughter 16. But obviously this girl knows how to play tennis because she comes from a family background of tennis players. You know, her family owns like their own academy. But when I watched her play, she wasn't that good. I felt like my daughter could beat her. I mean, the score ended up being 5-2 the first set, 5-3 the second set. But it was so many mistakes that my daughter made that she has never made even when she plays against me. When she plays against me, she on point. She comfortable. She got me running all over the place, making shots I didn't even think she could make. But when I see her play, she hitting balls out of the whole park, she hitting them balls. She ricocheting balls all over the place. And it's just disappointing and hard to watch because what we practice in this hot heat and humidity out in Florida, she doesn't transfer over into matches. And I'm like, where do I go with this? Like, am I supposed to just sit and watch this and watch her suffer through this and just say, you know what, maybe this ain't for her. No matter how much I push her, no matter how much I yell at her, no matter how much I get upset at her, she just not going to get there. Do I just reconcile that with that? Because I know I can't really pray on it. What am I pray about? Something that's not really adding anything to the kingdom. The kingdom doesn't need tennis players. The kingdom doesn't need football players. It just needs people who wanted to worship and praise and follow the words of Yahusha and the path of Yahuwah Elohaka. So as a parent, what do? Like, you're like almost tearing yourself into two different people. Because you want to bring in that ruach. You want to bring in that fearlessness that Yah told us that we shouldn't have any fear. But also, we're using the gifts to do something that really does not matter when it comes to the kingdom. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. And it's hard to talk about this because I don't know that many parents that have teenagers that are in sports that are actually, you know, doing this walk and doing what the children want to do in this world to be successful, at least teaching them something. I mean, at the end of the day, sports was a teaching tool. It taught you about yourself, what you can handle, what you can't handle, and how to persevere, mental toughness, emotional strength. That really what sports is for. It's the test if you had that or not. You know, I wouldn't regret going through the whole football thing again, because it really did teach me a lot. It taught me how to persevere. It taught me how to play through pain. It taught me how to be mentally tough. It taught me how to think on the fly. You know, certain things that I see when I'm away from that game, there's certain things I still incorporate in my teaching or in these podcasts was based on what I went through in football. So I'm like, can't really, you know, be remorseful of that situation, even if I was going through curses, because it did, like I said, it was that silver lining that did teach you a lot of how to prepare for what's coming in this world. So I struggle with this. And I really can't talk. I mean, it's nothing but girls in this house. And then my 5-month-old ain't like a grown man I can have this conversation with. You know, when it comes to women, everything is about emotion and moods and how they feel, how they think. And it ain't necessarily, you know, the logic that I'm looking for. So if you're a father, if you're a mother, really, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. But Proverbs 24, 10 through 12 says, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. If you forbear to deliver them that are drawn unto death and those that are ready to be slain, if you say, behold, we knew it not, does not he that ponders the heart consider it? And he that keeps your soul, does he not know it? And shall not he render to every man according to his works? This is a spiritual battle and knowing when to step up. Now, I'm not talking about sports. I'm talking about people who are faint-hearted in this world. Faint-hearted when it comes to what they've seen from this world. Because at the end of the day, yes, I was one of those people that as soon as 2019 hit, I thought for sure after 400 years we were gonna get up. We're gonna get up out of here. I thought, you know, I'm gonna have my bags packed. I'm getting ready to see how we're gonna, you know, leave up out of here. And 2 or 3 years later, a lot of people were like, "We ain't going nowhere." A lot of people gave up a little bit of hope. A lot of people was like, "Oh man, now we gotta sit here. We got all hyped up for the year of return back to Ghana. We thought we were gonna just get ready to pack up and leave, and the Most High was going to open a way for us, and it just never happened." And so people lost the ability to endure. So like I said before, I've seen the Israelite community and people who are in this walk start turning to social activism, trying to fight every battle for people who are not even following the Torah, following his law, statutes, commandments. But like it says, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. So you, when he says you have to endure, he means endure. And I feel like I have to endure what's going on with my daughter, endure what goes on in my household, endure this world. And that is a test all in itself, especially if you are a man leading a household. Bro, like I said before, y'all think y'all have issues with your parents and your relatives not coming into the truth or them testing you or isolating you. Get your own household, fam. You want to see that a whole nother war, another side of that war that nobody talks about? Yeah. Yeah. It's constant, bro. You would think it'd be peace. It's war. It's war sometimes. Sirach 2:13. Woe unto him that is faint-hearted, for he believes not. Therefore shall he not be defended. Woe unto him that is faint-hearted, for he believes not. Therefore shall he not be defended. This is how we renew our strength, for not being part of those who are faint-hearted, those who complain, those who whine, those who bitch. I mean, if you look at your life or what it could have been, that is the grace of the Most High that we find that silver lining to be strong. If you think, what would you have become if you did not follow the Most High Yahuwah or be put in a space to even be able to seek and search him? What would you be doing? Would you be a drug addict? Would you continue to be in environments that are not conducive to your age, to your ruach, to your life, or to the goals you want to achieve? Would you be still a sinner? Would you still be thinking sin is acceptable? Would you be a New Age spiritualist? Would you be a Catholic? Would you be a Muslim? Would you be a Christian? What would you be if the Most High didn't tap you on your shoulder and say, hey, this is the way? Sirach 4:9, deliver him that suffers wrong from the hand of the oppressor, and be not faint-hearted when you sit in judgment. This is the Most High is asking us is to be a buckler, a fighter, a defender of those who cannot defend themselves. Because if we defend others, we also will be defended. And he says, don't be faint-hearted when you sit in judgment. Do not be weak when it comes to stand up for the righteousness and the truth of others, or even yourself, or when you have to condemn somebody. A lot of people do a lot of cackling and talking behind private pages as if their life is so important that people are going to tear your life down if they see pictures of it. That's another faint-heartedness that I won't even get into. But when you have the ability to speak, you should speak boldly and speak proudly of what you know. Never to hide behind anything when it comes to the Most High Yahuwah. Be not faint-hearted, Sirach 7:10, be not faint-hearted when you make your prayer and neglect not to give alms. When it's your abilities to give, you give. When you have strength to give, you give. Sirach 24:24, faint not to be strong in Yahuwah, that he may confirm you. Cleave unto him, for Yahuwah Sabaoth is Elohim alone, and beside him there is no Savior. Faint not to be strong in Yahuwah. I really wish my daughter would understand this. But there's nothing I can do with, you know, puberty, adolescence, and learning to be a teenager. Even if I gave her these words, it really, like, it's on the Most High Yahuwah to really instill in her this understanding, this ideology or not. That also tears me up. But it doesn't cause me to be faint-hearted about it. I'm more upset than anything, but it doesn't cause me to be faint-hearted. But I choose to be strong in Yahuwah, regardless of what goes on in my house or outside of my house or around my house. I choose not to be faint-hearted. I choose to be strong in Yahuwah because of what he has done for me and what he has saved me from. I don't give myself time to whine, bitch, or complain. I really don't. Before I did, and that's because, you know, situations were out of my control, and I hate things that are out of my control. So it was a time, yes, I was complaining and whining in the beginning in my walk. It's a process everybody will go through. Everybody will go through. You'll complain about why you have to be here. You'll complain about why things aren't turning around for you when you found the Most High Yahuwah. You'll complain because your mind is programmed by this microwave mentality that you have to have these blessings in 30 seconds of a prayer. As soon as you knew how to act right, you would expect the doors would be open, all doors would be open. But when you come to the Most High Yahuwah and your mind is open, some doors are going to be closed. And you don't understand why these doors are closed for you. No matter how hard you knock on that door, some doors are going to remain closed for you because they're not of use to you anymore. But we don't see that. We don't see what he's actually saving us from. We only see what we see in front of our faces. Like it says in scripture that we only prophesy in part, that we never get to see the whole thing. Only a couple of men, a very few men, have ever been given visions seeing the whole entire thing. Luke 18, and he spoke a parable unto them to this end, that men ought to always to pray and not to faint, saying, there was in a city a judge which feared not Elohim, neither regarded man. And there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him, saying, avenge me of my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I fear not Yahuwah, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continually coming she weary me. And Adonai said, hear what the unjust judge says. And shall not Yahuwah avenge his own elect, which cry every day and night unto him, though he bears long with them? He's saying even an unrighteous judge will avenge a widow only because he getting tired of her always whining and complaining. How much so when we come into this walk, and we may not even have to cry, whine, complain, but the Most High knows our troubles. He knows that we are trodden down. He knows that we're conflicted when we come to this world. He knows that when he woke us up in the land of our captivity. Regardless if you are a Negro or Israelite or you are any other race, this is a land of your captivity because we're all going into bondage. Bondage into this digital currency, bondage into AI, bondage into this beast system. We are going into it. We have to endure it, but we are going into the system that is financial bondage. So he's saying, even they, the elect, I hear them, and I'm going to defend them. I'm going to avenge them. So he says, always pray. The top of that parable was always pray and not faint. As a woman, you are to not faint. You are not to whine. You're not to complain, because it could be so much harder for you. It could be so much harder for you. You could be single. I mean, in a way that you're so single that you are trodden down, you depressed, isolated. If you're a married woman or whatever, you could also be a widow. You could be a widow. You could be forced into prostitution. You could be forced into the mark if you didn't have a covering. A lot of things could happen to you. And if you're a single mother, it could be a lot more worse for you. A lot more worse, and you know that. You could be a victim of domestic violence, where if your children's father didn't like you and then had it in his mind that he wanted to eradicate you from this world, that he would do it. Lucky are you that you're not in that situation. And the reason why you're not in that situation is because the Most High tapped you on your shoulder and told you, here, come follow this way. That alone should rebuild your strength of what you need to do. I didn't want this episode to be somber or depressing. But like I said, sometimes when you rely on the assembly, the called out assembly, to really get you through certain things by shared testimony, shared stories, shared understanding when it comes to, you know, having children in this world. Like I said, it ain't too many parents talking about this online, really. Not that I even looked, but you really don't see it, of how to deal with disappointments and your child not living up to the full potential of their abilities and not even having the mindset or strength to even attempt, you know, not even attempt. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know if it's a situational thing, a bloodline thing. I'm really lost, because my father was really, really hard on me when it came to performing in sports. I wouldn't say he stressed me out, but I would say that he impressed upon me that I had to live up to a certain standard. And obviously now I'm impressing upon my daughter to live up to a different standard, also spiritually and also whatever she sets her heart to do. And it's just hard, because at 16, I was all in. I was all in when it came to sports. 16, I knew what it was to compete. I knew what it was, you know, to succeed after failing. I knew what it was to work hard. And it's certain things I don't see in my daughter that I saw in myself at 16 that I just don't see in her. So I would love to hear what you parents have done to get over this hump, especially, you know, doing this walk. You know, how do you make that important to you, or you don't make it important to you? But I choose not to be faint-hearted through all this, because I know this is somewhat a silver lining moment that I may have not seen yet, because I'm blinded by, it could be my own vanity and my pride of being so successful in sports, that you would think it would be passed down to your bloodline, and you would think when you came out of these curses, it no longer, the you know, trying to be, you know, great at fleshly things is no longer a part of my bloodline, that I should be happy that I'm getting a daughter that understands more about Yahuwah than anybody else's child out there. I don't know. Maybe, I guess. But I like to know what I like to find comfort in his dwelling place, and especially these prophecies in Joel 3. I'm going to read 6 through 21. I'm going to end it there. And hopefully we can find the silver lining in all this. The children also of Yehuda and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, that ye might remove them far from their border. This is also a telltale sign that the real land is in Africa or southern Namibia. Because if you look at the map, and he says far from their border, where was the Grecians at? The Grecians were, you know where Greece is. You know Italia, where Rome is. You know where that is. And if you look at the map and where Israel is in the Middle East, that's not far from their border. Literally, they could walk around into Greece. It'd take a long time, but it's not far from the border. Even if it's between the Mediterranean Sea from Greece to the Middle East, Israel, that's not far. You trying to say that the Most High don't know the distances between locations? When he said far from the border, that means sold into the Grecians. That means if you look at the map of southern Namibia and you look at where Greece is, that's far from their border. Behold, I will raise them out of the place whither ye have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head, which is what I talked about. It's coming. It's what I talked about. I mean, we're going into digital and financial bondage, but at the end of the day, when Yahusha comes back and the Most High starts to enact his judgment upon this world, those who led in captivity are going into captivity. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Yehuda. Why specifically Yehuda? Because we are the ones that were sold through a major curse in the transatlantic slave trade. We came all the way to the East Coast. Or to the West, really. We came to the West. We went into the islands. We came into America. So everything is going to turn itself back over. Proclaim ye this among the other nations. Prepare war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause your mighty ones to come down, O Yahuwah. Now, he ain't say come up. He ain't say come east. He said, come down. And he said he's going to bring them down to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Down, meaning south, meaning southern hemisphere, meaning South Africa. He didn't say, I'm going to bring them up. I'm going to bring them down. Let the heathen be awakened and come up to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Come up to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Why he say come up now? Because the Southern Africa, it goes upwards. So Southern Africa is a higher elevation than Northern Africa, if you didn't know that already. Let the heathen be awakened and come up to the Valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I will sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come ye, get you down, for the press is full. The fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of Yahuwah is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. Yahuwah also shall roar out of Zion, and utter his voice from Yerushalayim. He don't say utter his voice anywhere else in this country but Yerushalayim. That's how important the land is to him. Not to me, to him. And the heavens and the earth shall shake, but Yahuwah will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Yasharel. So shall ye know that I am Yahuwah Elohim dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Yerushalayim be holy. There shall no strangers pass through her anymore. Then shall Yerushalayim be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her anymore. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the rivers of Yehuda shall flow with waters, and a fountain shall come forth of the house of Yahuwah, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Whew. So just like I said, there are resources still being found to this day in Southern Africa. It's almost like the Most High is going to renew his creation from this land. Not anywhere else, but from this land. Mizraim shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness, for the violence of against the children of Yehuda, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. All you got to do is look where Edom is. Everywhere you see some columns with a little pyramid door door canopy on top of these little stone architecture, what they call it, Greco-Roman architecture. It ain't nothing but Edom. If you look at the caves of Petra, Jordan, and you see how it's built up, which was the Edomite stronghold, then look at everywhere else. Look at Britain, look at Rome, look at Greece, look at America. I mean, look at any other country too that Edom has spread out to. And you look at the government buildings, it's all built up by Greco-Roman architecture. It's the same thing, those columns, and you see a triangle or a pyramid within the top of the door frame, whatever. But it's all built like Edom, like first Edom. They haven't changed. It's literally a marker that they have done all throughout this country. They haven't changed not one thing. But Yehuda shall dwell forever, and Yerushalayim from generation to generation. For I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for Yahuwah dwells in Zion, not dwells in the Middle East, not dwells in Russia, not dwells in South America, not dwells in Canada, not dwells in America, but dwells in Zion. That is what I'm excited for. That is what I won't be faint-hearted for. Because why be faint-hearted at the time of your redemption? If you focus on being faint-hearted or what you don't get or what you don't have or what your life is, you are going to miss the benefits of the other nations being judged. Your mind will be alienated for the blessings that are going to come because you're so preoccupied with what you don't get, what you don't have, what you want to get and want to have through your own means. You're going to miss this truckload of blessings that are going to be dumped in your house or dumped on your lawn or dumped in you. You're going to miss it because you're focused on things that are making you faint-hearted. I'll see y'all next time.